Boys and girls of all ages, gather around and let me tell you a tale of the Mahales at the Black Tower, who are now ready to dole out your weekly dose of taint, because it is taint, and it always and forever will be the taint.
On here.
We're claiming it. We're going to take it. It's going to be ours.
No, we're not. We're not doing it. And just like Dragonsworn, it is ours, but everyone's.
It's everyone's. Okay, we're going to finish the intro. Thank you for tuning in. We're the Black Tower Podcast. We are a Wheel of Time podcast. You guys know us. I am your Sordovan Mihail, Josh.
I am your Bajan Mihail, Andrew.
And I am your Amenkan Mihail, Daniel.
And it is our pleasure to welcome you to the Black Tower Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening. It was a fantastic episode, and we'll see you next week. Well, for the next episode of the Black Tower Podcast.
Wait a second.
And that's it. Cut out. No, I did want to say, like, so something amazing did just happen. Now, I'm not going to spoil anything, but there is people in the world who done seen them first two episodes.
Correct. There are a number of people in the world.
There are a number of people. We live in a world in which the Wheel of Time TV show
is already
been incepted into people's eyeballs and brain balls.
Brain balls.
Yep. So I didn't want to watch a lot of the live coverage and that kind of stuff because I kind of want this weekend or, you know, this Friday to kind of be my experience for like the kind of first time of the thing. I clipped through a couple of them and I got to see, you know, some of the different cast members that like Matt Hatch got to interview and talk to, and Critter and Daniel B. Green.
Did you see when they said, oh yeah, as soon as we learned it was for this book series, we went and found all of your sites and started watching all of your material. Yep. Did you see when multiple people said that? And I was like, so I'm sitting there with Alyssa Powers. We're like in my hotel room. I got her phone, my laptop, and the TV, and we're watching all the streams at the same time. And when they said that, we both looked at each other and we were like it was beautiful. It was a great moment.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we theorize that they probably would, especially those that may be busy with several projects and don't have time to read the series entirely. If they can find folks that do like brief overviews, like I imagine that for many of the talent on the show, that like Lauren's Wheel of Time 101 series has been a nigh invaluable asset. I mean, it's pretty cool to know, but we already know. I'm not going to say we already know that from like their interactions with the fandom on Twitter and different other media sites and the way they've done releases. It's reasonable to assume that they really paid a lot of attention to the fandom and really like kind of dove in and at least observed the fandom. But if it wasn't clear before, it was definitely clear whenever Matt hosted the kind of like unveiling or premiere of the full trailer and brought Daniel Henney on. And he talked about how much he loved the fandom and they could feel the love from the fandom and it helped them like motivate to do it. And they're like, it's rare to have this much support making a series for the first time. So,
yeah.
Absolutely beautiful.
I also know that the other thing that's true is that we talk to them pretty regularly on this show. So it's actually good to know that they are listening. Because it'd be weird if we just talked to them and they weren't actually listening to our show. That'd be very sad and very weird, but we all know that they are. So Alvaro, still waiting for you to call us back. it's time to go ahead and get your butt onto this show.
We keep doing that, and that's either going to get us a guest appearance or blocked.
Probably,
I mean, both. And I don't think it's a 50.
They're badges of honor, both. The badges of honor is both. Like we asked Alvaro to come on so much in our recordings that he heard it enough to be like,
got sick of it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if Alvaro was not one of the people who was following everybody, but he keeps on hearing from other cast members? Hey, bro, you should really call these guys back because they talk about you a lot.
I'd be curious. So this is going to be a very brief question. Of the cast that we know and what we've seen, how they engage with the fandom online and kind of like how they seem to act and what we can, from the little bit we've seen, infer about like their personality and stuff, mm-hmm. who among the cast do you think is most likely to listen to the Black Tower podcast?
Oh, the sad part is the cast member who is no more.
That was my first thought too.
Yeah.
And you know, he wasn't there.
Yosha?
So we didn't get
Yosha's the idea no. from a...
Could be Yosha. Barney wasn't there because, you know, for obvious reasons.
Well.
And...
Hold on. I might cut this out. Dalen, or do you find if I just call you Dalen or... Okay, sure. I just wanted to make sure, like, I'm so used to everybody's, like, Discord names and everything that I wanted to make sure it was fine for me to use, like, your actual name rather than just, oh, I'm just going to do it because whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, Dalen suggests that Joshua, Old Dirtbeard mentioned Logan's Avatar Morte, Marcus and Barney from Matt Stagger. I definitely agree on the Barney. I could see maybe Marcus Rutherford doing it.
I think
Madeline.
I think Yosha does.
That's why he shaved his head. He saw the Watt Castathon and the Karian and cut and was like, yes. And then tried it, messed up.
And then went, nah.
And I'm like, dude, I can give you pointers. I can tell you where to go and get some gold bottles to powder your forehead.
I like to think that Yosha is watching. I like to think that because, you know, the Lord Dragon. He is.
But he's ignoring us exactly like he does in the books.
But
it's
extremely on brand.
Like, we're gonna see him for 5 seconds. He's gonna hand a random person next to us a sack of pins and then just leave.
Guys, okay. So first and foremost, let's do a spoiler warning because this is starting to get into like spoilery stuff, which granted again, our name is. So it's not like we didn't set you up for failure already, but let's figure out a spoiler warning, and then I want to say something because I think it would be fucking dope. But
so you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right, Dalen, choose a number between 1 and 8, and I'll pick that to be your thing, the spoiler warning. 6?
Yeah, see, hey, that's the thing.
Nice.
First time reader thinks that the Black Tower is going to be the name of the corrupted White Tower. And like, I get that. I dig that. And I like the
right
surprise, motherfucker.
Well, and like if we're being completely honest, they're not even totally wrong.
All right. So
the Tainted Tower.
Well, let's do our other stuff before we get to the spoiler warning kind of section, I guess. Because we do need to get into the actual episode at some point. Actually, you know what? No, we'll spoil the warning now. Finish our conversation and move on.
Yeah, spoiler warning.
No, but there's still others. Anyway, spoiler warning. Here you go. This one is from More Shoddy.
Welcome to the Black Tower, a Wheel of Time podcast. All right, let's check this
one. All right, who is this going after today?
This podcast episode will likely be spoiling all the books in the series, but if Daniel is in charge of the reporting, it'll never hit the end of the day. In case you're some masochist Patreon supporter who hasn't read the whole series and just gets off on being part of lost episodes, how about you put that spoiler comment all the way on?
Excellent. Perfect. So I just want to think, my thought now that we've spoiled the entire series, or in the spoiler warninged the whole series, is... the reason that the Black Tower boys were not asked to come to the premiere was because of our content and our spoilerific name, but that whenever that gets introduced in the show, they're going to give us the new dragon sword pins to give out to everybody else at premieres.
There you
go. I'm just putting that out there right now.
We're putting that out in the universe.
They're so ready for it that they didn't tell us that. They weren't, we don't exist yet. So they didn't tell us anything. but they already have it planned that when it shows up in the show, it's just Black Tower from then on.
They're going to change one of the pins. Because it never, I don't think it ever says it's like a full, well, no, it does describe the claws, but they're going to change the pins to be our sword in a different color scheme for our dragon. And then you're like, can we use this? And we're going to say, yes.
Hell yeah, you can.
Tainted siding activate.
That actually would be a pretty cool idea. There you go, Amazon. There's a free marketing idea. If you dare to accept it, we'll
indeed.
We'll go wherever you need us to be and hand out the new pins.
There you go.
Anyway,
literally anyway.
I'm gonna substitute what you said with the segue I had in mind.
Aw.
No, you're gonna like it. Because okay. So we're gonna rewind. So if you want to get yourself your own dragon or sword coins, our soldier, our dedicated and Ashaman coins, make sure you check out this episode's sponsor, our patrons. Head over to blacktowerpod.com, go on our Patreon. You can see which tiers you have to support at to be able to get those coins, and you too can become a supporter of the Black Tower Podcast. Yes, this episode, other than our website, we're not going to plug anything else. This episode is dedicated to the patrons that have been supporting us for so long, that have been absolutely amazing fans and friends.
Seriously.
And are not afraid to let us know when we do something they don't like, and we love it. So yeah, this episode is entirely for everybody, but definitely a special shout out to our patrons.
Agreed.
Indeed.
Because we love you.
Special shout out to the Patreons.
BlackTowerPod.com for all your stuff, Black Tower. Go and check it out. Become a Patreon member. Get some cool swag. And you too can have the same sword and dragon coins that Sarah Nakamura has, and Brandon Sanderson have, and Daniel B. Green has, and all Matt Hatch and Taylor have.
Yep.
As well as all of our other patrons that, have done some amazing support. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, words.
English is hard.
English is.
Anyway, right. With that all said and done, today's episode, what are we talking about today, Josh?
We are talking about a land that is far, far away. A land surrounded by mystery, surrounded by myth and unknownness. Yeah, that's right. It's a land that nobody, save for Jane Farstrider himself, has ever visited and returned from. Even the sea folk, when they do trade with these mysterious people, go up to the dock and they're like full COVID rules, man. They're like, I would put the product on this dock, and I will accept the payment on this dock. And they're like, no touching, no seeing. You go away now. Thank you for your porcelain. And these are crazy people we know nothing about. Maybe. We don't know. It's mysterious.
I like the idea that Shara is now France, even though that's supposed to be Carrion.
It's way too big, and they win too many battles.
Ooh. Ooh.
I'm sorry, France. I love you, France. You've got some really dope stuff.
France is actually a really, really great place to visit. I'm going to say that Shara is Russia.
Ooh. I like that.
Well, do we want to talk about
the just show up
the parallels like... first to shit on that idea?
Yeah, go for it.
So Sara parallels and resembles shit, yeah, we'll take a shit right on your parade,
right on.
It resembles much of Africa, especially sub-Saharan Africa, and it also has some distinct similarities to Imperial China, so it's kind of a meshing of the two. It's one of the few places and cultures where we get descriptions that even touch on the aspect of potential race or skin complexion for the people there.
Okay.
Kind of like, so we get it with the sea folk, that they're generally of a darker skin, which makes sense because they are out on the ocean. And if you are like me, especially of Irish ancestry, you go from some weird shade of white, whatever this shade is, Caucasian white, I guess, into a really bad shade of burnt man. Like just full on lobster. Red lobster. Yeah.
You get lobster.
Yeah. And given like the geography, which we'll talk about of Sara, it makes a lot of the same sense of like anybody that lives around a desert that typically as an adaptive feature over generations and generations have developed higher levels of melanin in their skin to help offset, you know, all the UV rays and the harsh sunlight and things of that nature. So,
okay. So you got to, I would say this then, it's got the same sort of landmass and turn of the century mysteriousness of Russia, but it's obviously a different demographic of people.
Okay.
Is that where we're going with that?
Yeah, that's fair.
Is that a fair thing to say?
And it goes to the names too. When you think of like Bow of the Wild and Shaofan, they sound like more kind of like Asian culture inspired kind of names. It's not a name you would find in like, I don't know, the redneck backwoods of South Carolina, where I'm from, where everybody's true. Name some boring name like Andrew
Bubba.
Or Joshua or James or David.
Or I will Billy say this: Bob, I think the Joe first Bob, time. Billy. And correct me if I'm wrong, our fact checker
could just be saying Bo wrong.
the first time Shara is mentioned in the stories is when Noel is telling bedtime stories to Oliver, correct?
Is that Lord of Chaos?
Ish. And he's reading them and he tells them about the giants who have their mouths on their
because we see them in Lord of Chaos chapter 17 the Wheel of a Life and Ruark is giving a report to Ran. Ooh. That there is fighting in Sara. So was it before that or after that?
I'm gonna say that you're correct. That's the first mention.
I was gonna say it's actually mentioned relatively not early on in the series, because of course they don't actually go into like, oh, the whole world needs to like blah 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 until, you know, book like 3. But I think it's actually mentioned in
As Far As I Have
5,
which is where the first time reader I work with, he is on chapter 6.
Nice.
And I told him I can't wait for him to get to chapter 31.
But yeah, I think it's mentioned there where if I remember correctly, Valen Luka is actually claiming that one of his acts is from Shara. And
that's true.
Everybody's a little like, no, but like, sure. Cause like, we've never seen this before. So might as well, even though all know that it's not.
Oh wait, yeah, I was wrong anyway.
We don't get any like real mention of Shara with anything like concrete in any way until much later. And I think the only like legitimately accurate statements we hear is from you know, Demandred way later, and Noel, who's been there, even though he's a little fanciful as well.
Yes.
Okay. So with that, one of the things whenever I was reading, you know, definitely in the days leading up to this episode, not, you know, like an hour or so before we did this episode. One of the things I love most in school, in addition to history, was whenever we especially like in history focused on geography, because a lot of geography and history go hand in hand. So the geography of Sara is pretty incredible from what we can see and know. Like, I'm surprised the parallel doesn't mention the wall along the Cliffs of Dawn being like the Great Wall of China. unless I just missed reading that part. That's kind of what it made me think of whenever I first, you know, kind of read about it.
Yeah, I think that that's actually one of the other reasons that Shara is, again, nothing in the Wheel of Time is actually one thing. The Andorians are not English. The Carianans are not French. The Aiel are not Irish people who also live in the desert. Like, it's not one-to-one for anything in the world. But of course, we pull from a lot of different things, and there are sort of main influences.
Yeah. Well, you get a lot of
information. And I think that legitimately, the if we're being completely honest, I think that these Sean Chan are actually supposed to be effectively main influence Korean, and the Sharans are supposed to be main influence Chinese, which is one of the reasons that he includes the fact that there is sort of the Great Wall of Shara.
I was just actually going to say, when you look at the wall there, and then you look at, they've got the arid desert climates, they've got the more humid jungle climates, they've got coastal climates, and they've got icy climates. Like, it actually does fit with China more so than Russia. And when you start looking into, like, you know, the ethnic diversity, you know, that does actually fit very well with China.
Well, that's another one of the parallels for China, because Sara has a monopoly on the silk trade. But also, like, kind of to harken back to the likeness to Africa, one of the names that Sara is known as, Kigali, is actually the capital of Rwanda. So,
oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, Kasara is known by a bunch of different names. There's a bunch of different names for the landmass. Sara being the most common, but there's Kodansan, Shamara, Tomaka, Kigali, and Shibuya. But there's also this area that, you know, there's one of the big things that makes Sara very different is it's very bossing say. it's a secret. We're safe behind the walls. You don't need to worry about what's behind the walls. You know, the Earth King has invited you to Lake Laogai, which is just where all the Ayad actually are. You've got, like, these people that they appear to be under the rule of the ruler, but they're really not. They're actually the ones in power. All this kind of stuff. It's definitely kind of like Earth Kingdom bossing, say. Actually, so that might be a better comparison than any of the others.
Is Rand the dragon or the avatar?
No.
I mean, he would be neither in Sara.
Rand is the dragon, and Demandred is the avatar.
Oh!
In the wrong series, and that's why he doesn't win.
Gotcha.
Because if this was Avatar The Last Airbender, then Demandred would be the hero. But it's not. It's Wheel of Time. And therefore, Demandred is just trying so hard to be the hero when he's not.
Yeah.
So,
but one of the big things is, like, their secrecy, right? They, when you tremendous. Get to...
They're very xenophobic.
Yeah. When you get to the Cliffs of Dawn, there's six distinct trading... fortresses, essentially, because they're small, like smaller cities that are surrounded by these high walls, and each one of them is at the end of a path that would allow you to climb the Cliffs of Dawn and then cross over into Sauron lands. So that's where you trade if you come across the IL waste, or if you are IL, or whatever the case may be. There's, like, what is it, five or six port towns on the south and southwest coast of the Sauron landmass, where you can trade. One, two, three, four. Yeah, there's five. Right. But for the most part, the rest of Sara is off limits. It's unknown. Mm-hmm. And the only reason we know what the easternmost coast looks like is because the sea folk have been able to get past the barricades and blockades by Sara and able to come around and map out the east coast. But even from the East Coast, there's, other than some mountains and some inlets and features, there's really nothing that they have that they can be like, ah.
And then with that, again, my favorite part there is that actually is one of the reasons to me that, like, Shara didn't give a shit. They were just like, yeah, fine. If you get all around all of the blockades on our south side, which is where we actually have stuff, then go ahead and map out the eastern side of
right.
We have nothing there and you can go do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, that's like whenever you were talking earlier, Josh, about like, you know, nobody gets to go further in. Like, there is only one example of anybody getting further than where they're supposed to. And it's the Sea Folk mapping the eastern coastline mm-hmm. of Sara.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting but, to me because like the Aiel and the Sharans are actually highly similar in that regard. It's just that the Aiel bring it up to 10 and then the Sharans bring it up to 11 as to not be outdone by the Aiel.
Yeah.
Because the Aiel, as soon as you cross over the Dragon Wall, if you're carrying him, they kill you immediately. They're just like, hey, fuck you, eat a dick. Your king killed our tree once and now we're never going to forgive you. And then if you're a merchant, they're like, okay, we'll trade with you and you can travel with us, but only in the areas we go and only with us. If you're found outside of those areas and not with us, we will probably take it as an insult. If you're a traveling person, they're like, we pity you and we're just going to take you around for a little while. But that's it. Like, that's it. Anybody else is turned back immediately and they just go back over the Dragon Wall. Just go away. And the Sharans are like, okay, cool. Let's take that and just make it true about everybody. We just turn everybody back and just go,
well,
no.
Aren't you there can't instances come in here. Of Sharans buying slaves from Aiel?
Yes, there are. And so again, they trade with them on occasion, but again, there's like this very specific way of doing it. There's the very specific way of doing it with the Aiel. There's the very specific way of doing it with the Athan Mir. They're very, very, very rigid, you know, cultural and transactionary things that happen. And then that's it. As soon as you're done trading, yeah, I guess your slaves get to come into Shara, but not very comfortably. And you get to go home, or you get to not be alive anymore. Like, those are your two options.
They do practice Chattel slavery.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is it just means that, like, a person has complete and total ownership over another.
Yep.
But yeah, so, like, what I find, so backing it up, apparently Sara used to be many different like states or prefectures or areas, and within a couple centuries of the breaking of the world was actually unified. But since then, like they've really formed this kind of like cohesive, almost North Korea-esque control over propaganda and information within mm-hmm. Sara. So like, you know, some Saurans have confirmed that, you know, they still have Trollocs come from the Blight and they're like, but it's not a problem. We defeat them every time. Some acknowledge that there was an attempted invasion in the Sara during the Trolloc Wars, but they were easily defeated. So they brushed off as like, no big deal. Others just say it never happened.
Dear leader.
Yeah.
Dear leader did such a good job with them.
Yeah. And we see that about every conflict. Like most Saurans deny that there was ever an attempted invasion by the armies of Alter Hawkwing, specifically under the command of his daughter. I mean, that was 2,000 ships and 300,000 troops. And the Sea Folk were like, yeah, no, they failed. Well, how do you know if you can't see in there? Because all of their ships were on fire in the fucking harbor.
We seen it.
Indeed.
We seen it.
We seen it.
And that was in... That was an FY, so the free year is 993.
Yep.
So it was still quite a ways ago, but yeah. So like, and Sara is like the second largest. I don't really want to call it the second largest landmass because it is continentally connected to the Westlands and the Isleways. But if you cut it out, the only bigger landmass than Sara is the Shan Chan lands.
Yes.
So and apparently. Whoever was in the Shan Chan lands before Alter Hawkwing said, I'm going to take that shit, didn't do nearly as well. But Sara was like, they showed up and they pulled into a port city and like, we're going to take this shit. And Sara was like, You're fucking adorable.
Well, yeah. And
I'm going to burn your boat.
To digress a little bit.
We don't do that.
Avienda's. Yeah, I know, right? We're totally focused. In Avienda's visions of the future, Shara falls to Shanchan pretty quickly the second go around. Right? Am I remembering that correctly?
No, because it was correct.
It was the Aiel that held out the longest.
Correct.
Which is equally like is badass and also really sad.
Oh yeah.
Because I think the Shanchan trying conquering Sara was so that they could kind of pincer on or you know flank the Aiel and basically control both sides of the waste because they were getting a lot of trade from Sara.
And Shara, not only are they an enemy state, but they are not a member of the Dragon's Peace.
Correct.
And so Shanchan was like, oh, hell yeah, we're going to go over there and take them out, which makes them the main power on the continent. And it's
now they own the Silk Road. Progression. We know how well that went in history.
I hate to say it. Yeah.
Right.
Like, there was so much of China's historic and ancient fortunes that was built off of owning the Silk Trade. Just like they have a Silk Road in the Wheel of Time, the Silk Road was very much a thing in our world's history. Yeah. Probably the same road. You know, the map of the Wheel of Time looks a little Pangea.
I mean,
you know, it's a different turning of Pangea.
Yep.
If you squish it down a little, you rotate it about 123 degrees, stretch it out on its x-axis, you know, it looks just the same.
Yeah. Pinch and squeeze. Pinch and squeeze.
Yeah, if you make everything different, it looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
Wait.
But it used to be that Carian used to have trade with Sara. For 470 years, they had trade with Sara until one guy was like, played his best George Washington and decided to chop down the proverbial cherry tree.
Don't you compare that man to George Washington. Don't you do it.
I mean, they're actually both equally bad leaders. So,
ooh.
George Washington was not a good leader, especially in the military. He was a terrible general.
Shade.
Wow. He won at Yorktown out of pure dumb luck and because of all of his other generals. Like, it's romanticized in American history how effective George Washington was.
He was
like, it's crazy. Like, people, like, how strong does your propaganda have to be that even now more Americans believe that he actually chopped down a cherry tree? And like didn't lie about it, then people realize no, that is a propaganda story from them guarding support for him to be the president.
Oh yeah,
like I'm sorry, I hate if I burst any bubbles bubble. Yeah, anybody's bubble. I love America. I love American history, but that's like one of the most long-lived propaganda things in the U.S. Like, that's been like propaganda for 200 years, and more Americans still believe it than don't.
Sure.
Popping that cherry tree.
Anyway, enough of a tirade on old George Washington. But yeah, so they had trade for 470 years.
Is until... still a good guy, though.
Oh, I didn't say, well. Sure.
Anyway.
It depends on what your aspect of good guy is. Like... We're not going to get into all that.
Shara!
Yes.
But so Carian had really good trade with Sara for about 470 years. And then the Aiel decided they didn't need to be a thing anymore. So they just walked up to Carian and whooped that ass. And then went the fuck back home.
No.
No.
But,
we don't want that. Yeah. No, Mo.
That's not for us. It's not for us. No.
But as far as landmass, like Sara, it's at its widest point going west to east is 3,500 miles across from east to west. And at its longest point is like 5,200 miles, I believe. 5,300 miles from its south coast along the Sea of Storms to the Mountains of Doom in the north. It's fucking massive.
Yeah. No. Yep. And then that's like, that's kind of all we get from them. Like, if we want to talk about Shara in the books, like up until the last battle, that's Shara. That's
the episode's over.
The episode's over. Like, that they don't make any significant contribution other than to serve as a rumor generator or a, you know, campfire story in the case of Noel and Oliver.
Well, we're led to believe that they're a non-actor because they're embroiled in like essentially civil war, which I mean, to a degree they are.
And that was the thing is when you start moving things, you know, the Aiel start talking about how unsettled they are because not only are we, you know, we're leaving the threefold land to look for he who comes with the dawn. You know, things are happening. We've got wetlanders going into Rhydian. We've got Aes Sedai going into Rhydian. And equally as scary and significant is the fact that they're getting rumors from inside Shara that there is chaos, civil war, and all kinds of skirmishing and fighting and killing within the walls of Shara. And it's got a lot of people in the waist on edge because this is one of those situations where, you know, they don't do that at all. They're the quiet ones. They're the ones that we know nothing about and that we trade with occasionally. And now we've got a situation where we're learning things about them and they're not good things to learn about them. And there's kind of scary things to learn about them. Yeah. And so
well, let's talk about how they got embroiled in the Civil War.
You're good. And that's just where I was going to lead to. You never figure, we don't know as a reader reading through for the first time, we don't know what's causing that. And we're led to kind of feel that unease and that tension with the Aiel, but we learn very quickly where that's coming from. We've got hints, I guess.
I would say, well, it takes a lot of the deeper kind of mysteries of the Wheel of Time. It takes some piecing together of tidbits of information. Like, you know, everybody, it was like a revelation whenever, I forgot what book squash it was, revealed that Grendel killed Asmodee, right?
But spoilers!
But if you go back and you look and you actually plot and track where the Forsaken are, who could feasibly be there, and who has a motive to kill Asmodian, it's like, well, Grendel is the obvious choice. Maybe we should talk about that later on, like the actual clues in the book and tracking on in the through the books how it is actually legitimate that Grendel kills Asmodian. But
I love it.
Just like Grendel killed Asmodian, she is directly responsible for the civil unrest of Sara. She literally kidnaps their, is it the Shoban? Yeah, or the Shoban, which is the name given. So Sara is ruled by an absolute monarchy. And when the ruler is female, their Shoban is their title. When it's male, it's Shabote. And the way it works is... Yeah. Whenever, so when the, so it's rumored that the first
Shibuli,
continue.
He got that Shibuli.
Sorry, I totally derailed your thought.
No, you're fine. So the rumor is that the first monarchical ruler of unified Sara was a male. So it would have been a Shibuli. So what he did was he took a consort. So basically, he got married to a female. And then after 7 years, died. Then she took over as the monarchical ruler of Sara as the Shoban. Shoban. However you say it. Fucking Shoboken.
Shoboken, New Jersey.
Shaboopy takes over as the Shaboopy.
That's your Shaboopy. 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 Shaboopy.
But this is the way that the rulership goes. You have a male ruler, marries a woman. He dies. She takes over as the ruler. She marries a male consort. Then she dies after 7 years, and he becomes the ruler. And it goes that way. It has for all of unified Sauron history since the breaking of the world. Until Grendel, when she takes... Fuck
that bitch.
And she takes and kidnaps and compulses the shit out of the newly raised or newly realized Sheboin and her consort, which is the first break in the line of succession in Sauron in all of their recorded history as a unified nation.
Yes.
So they're like, what the fuck do we do? Now, I mean, they rationalize.
There might be an Avril Lavigne in there somewhere that they both of them died. And so they replaced one with a lookalike and kept the cycle going. But, you know,
that's a conspiracy theory.
Hard to say. What?
Is that a conspiracy theory?
It is. Yeah. That Avril Lavigne isn't actually Avril Lavigne and that they had like, they got a lookalike. No, it's not a robot. Funny. That they actually got a lookalike of Avril Lavigne at some point and like made her the new Avril Lavigne.
Yeah. Well, until the lookalike died in the moon battle of, you know, 1963.
Oh, yeah.
No, oh, wait, exactly. That was too early. We weren't there yet. Or were we? Anyway, so all this happens, and where was I going with it?
Sorry. Civil unrest. Basically, she is the cause of it.
Yeah, so she is the cause of it. And it is this civil unrest that Demandred takes advantage of, comes in, and starts making it look like he's fulfilling prophecies to become Baal the Wild.
Yep.
So in their time of direst need, a savior arises from the ashes.
And
he came from the cliffs of dawn, and no man or woman could touch him, not even the Ayad.
Did he come from the cliffs of dawn, or did he come from the inside of a glacier? The really...
I mean, yeah, right. I have slumbered for 1,000 years.
The really tragic thing about this is that these are rumors, or these are prophecies for the Dragon Reborn.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an evil nation. Okay. Do they have evil things that they do? Yes.
They have some unsavory cultural aspects.
That's what I was going to say. Because I would also say the same thing about Sean Chan. I don't like Sean Chan at all, but I think that they are the product of certain cultural things and whoever is at the helm at the time. Now, unfortunately, similar to the Sean Chan, Shara also has a little bit of a problem of royal family dispute.
And
What I was going to say is that snakes tend to be the rulers because they kill the honest ones and then rule longer. And so typically, as much as I don't necessarily want to say it, I would say I think saying it's fine. I do think that Sean Chan and Shara are more often run by bad people because that is their sort of hierarchy of people, is that, as I said, you know, you end up getting somebody who killed the last emperor.
Right.
And people who kill people to rule countries are typically not very good.
Not the most what I remember of characters.
What I remembered that I was going to say, where I was going with that is... Yeah. Culturally, they explain that every 7 years, the current ruler dies and their consort or, you know, marital spouse takes over. They say it's the will of the pattern. It's how the pattern decrees it to be. When in reality, to keep any monarch from getting too powerful, much like the force, like the Dali in Ba Sing Se,
right.
The Ayad, specifically the female channelers of the Ayad, they kill. So, yeah, they kill the ruler after 7 years.
Can you imagine the ruler dying at 6 years and having to pretend that they're still alive for a whole year? And then just
weekend at Bernie's for a whole year. And then I hope they learn some good stasis weaves.
Die at a year later. And then.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of these things that, like, it's an incredibly interesting culture. Because in some ways they're very different from all the other cultures. And it's like they have this thing of secrecy, and it makes them kind of intrinsically interesting. We want to know more. We want to learn more. So we're trying to find everything we can, just like, you know, watching live streams of the premiere and trying to identify who the Twitter of Chaos is. you know, things like that.
A lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
What if it's me?
Yeah. What else is interesting? Like, we only get a couple. I've just been
pretending to be bad at social media this whole time so that I can break you. Yeah.
So what's interesting, we only get the names of, it's not me. Of it's three. Not me. We only get the names of three Saurians throughout the entire series. It's only three. So we get Chiape. Guess I'm saying that right. I don't know. Who is the Shoboan that Grendel takes. And then her betrothed, Shao Fan. And then we also get Galbraith, who is named after Stephanie Galbraith Combs, who is one of the fans that I would imagine, much like Matt Hatch, helped do some kind of reading towards the end and got a named character.
Yep.
Unfortunately, her story isn't nearly as successful or good as Innkeeper Hatch, but it's still pretty. Yep. It's like not, that's nothing against her. Like the character.
No, sure.
Gets in an entire culture of people, an entire military that's being manipulated by one of the Forsaken. Go figure. Big shock, surprise.
I know, right? Right.
Yeah, and she's one of the Ayed that Demondred sends for to destroy Matt Calton's command post, and she has to go back and report that she failed and is punished. So,
yep,
which is not a good thing in Shara.
I mean, it's a good thing anyway. How are you into it? Like, because I feel like
if your kink is like immense pain. If your kink is immense pain, wouldn't one of the Adam be like one of the best like sex toys ever?
Well, only yes. If you actually have a good partner, but yeah.
You sit there and you're like, oh, I really like pain. You try to touch your own thing.
Your
and
own then bam. What? Yeah. It's
the fucking bracelet part of the Adam. Yeah. Leave me alone.
I like particularly in that, you know, with Shara. So Grendel's stirring it up. Grendel is making things nasty. Demandred is like, you know what? I'm going to take advantage of the situation. I am going to go ahead. And I love how the other Forsaken are like, okay, that's a waste of time.
Ooh.
Dummy.
Thanks for shoddy.
That's lame.
That's actually really cool. But
Demandred is actually looking for a Saangreal as well.
That is correct.
Channelers.
Yes.
His motivations in taking over Shara were only partially motivated by taking over as ruler, because there was a Saangreal that was in two pieces that was hidden in Shara.
Correct. Well, that's why he goes there originally. And then I like this post that you know,
the fact checker Mahale.
The fact checker Mahale has put in. Because it's true, but it's also wrong. I mean, like, again, it's Brandon Sanderson saying them, and that's correct. He is the author of the story. I'm not saying that that's not true, but, like, Demandred thinks co-ops prophecies of the dragon, but they're actually about him, is like saying the exact same thing in more words, because it could be about the dragon reborn. And if, you know, Rand had actually made it to Shara and gone ahead and done the things that were there, he could have been Bow of the Wild, and then Shara could have been fine. But it ends up being about Demandred in exactly the same way that the prophecy of Harry Potter ends up being about Harry Potter, because Voldemort makes a choice. Not because it couldn't be about someone else, if that makes sense.
Nice. Oh. Okay.
So apparently, River of Souls, on that same vein, as it's supposed to give us a more like in-depth window into Demondred and Sara, cannot be considered 100% canon because it was cut early enough that it did not get subjected to Maria's detailed continuity validation. Sure. So it didn't get the continuity check from Maria to make sure it matched with the rest of the story.
Sure. Though
there are people that are going to listen to this and they're going to comment down below. And by all means, please do comment down below other incongruities that are perceived in the series.
Oh, 100%. Well, I will also say that, to be completely honest, I appreciate that response. And I do actually think that that's legit. I'm not saying that she didn't do a very good job with a lot of fucking story to deal with, you know, different things, and that it going through her is a seal of approval. However, everything that I have read about Shara so far works. There isn't anything that I think from my reading doesn't work canonically. So even if it didn't get a seal of approval, it gets my seal of approval. And that's not nothing.
Yeah, I think it works where you can take it as like, this is part of, you know, maybe RJ and some of Brandon's like original intent with Demondred and Sara to kind of give us a glimpse more into Demondred, to not make it, we see nothing, 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 meeting, nothing, 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 and bam, massive fucking gateway.
Right.
to give us a more in-depth thing. But I mean, on your left.
Also, justify
on your left.
We're on the wrong side.
Did you guys know that the reason that nobody joins the Wakandans in chanting when they show up for the last fight in Endgame is that Endgame was filmed before Black Panther came out, and so the only people who knew the chants were the people who had filmed Black Panther, because movie wasn't actually physically out yet. And so I can absolutely imagine that most of the cast would have been in to do the chants with the Wakandans.
Oh, yeah.
But they physically didn't know them because the movie wasn't out yet.
There's your
I think it'd be a cool scene to see like all like of the massive amount of Avengers or the kind of amalgamated Avengers and their cohorts all like going with the Wakanda chat. I think it's better that they don't, because it allows them to keep all the individualities that bring all the different groups into the battle.
But
no,
but
and I totally
know, it could be too super that. Dope. I do like that needs to be like an extra cut. That.
Oh, right. Well, my heart.
You do know,
Avengers Forever
Panther 2. There's going to be a tribute to Chadwick Boseman.
Oh yeah,
along that vein.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Hmm.
They're gonna figure out.
Oh yeah, it's gonna make us cry.
Oh, like I'm babies. Already dude,
like children.
The fucking in the intro for Black Panther 2 is gonna start, and I'm gonna be crying.
Oh yeah,
like a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's gonna be great.
That's not what we're talking about though. So, it is a little piece of fun trivia, but other than that, that was what it was purpose. Anyway, I think that
there could be a good question. What was something about the Saurons that you learned either through reading or looking at them after that was very surprising to you? Like, it could be anything to deal with Sara, the landmass, the country, the people, the culture.
So I'll go first because I was actually even kind of going to go into this. I think one of the most interesting things is that the people who rule Shara rule with an iron fist. They have every capability of doing anything they want. Now, again, what you do with that is up to you. It depends on the ruler, but they do have the ability to do anything they want for 7 years. And that's it. Well, 14 years, I guess. Because as soon as you come in, you get 14 years. 7 until your significant other dies. And then 7 more until you die. So for 14 years, you can do anything you want. But also, like, seemingly in a bid to make it so that nobody gets so powerful that they rule forever, you also only get 14 years. But you get to do anything you want for 14 years. It's like, I think it's one of the weirdest, coolest, most interesting like monarchy tradition kind of things of absolute power at an utter and completely known limit that I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's most extreme term limit ever.
Right? You can cut down
as many cherry trees
as you
want. But can't I run for a third term?
No.
You can run.
You may not. But you'll die tired.
Aww.
I think the one that I like the most, and I'm bringing it back to the male channeler perspective, is that it's one of the few cultures, if not the only culture, that does not immediately execute male channelers. Now, Aiel, of course, don't directly execute them. Yes. They send them up to spit in Sightblinder's eye. But we know in the Westlands where we're at, Aes Sedai hunt down men and gentle them, which essentially kills them.
Yep.
And then
aftercare.
Aftercare
is important. Sorry. Aftercare is important.
It's gentling, just this, gentling a man with no aftercare is the equivalent of fucking somebody in the ass and not even have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around.
Right?
Okay.
There's your movie quote. It's a very popular one. You should get that one pretty easily.
It is a good one. But in Shara, they find a man. When they find a man who can channel, they go, okay, this guy needs to go over here. And he is now, I don't know, like a breeding animal?
He's
like
breeding stock.
They literally say trace that without it sounding
no. That's how bad it is. They literally trace.
No way to say that. They trace their sound bad.
They trace those males. They trace their bloodline and lineage the same way that people trace the bloodlines of purebred horses for racing.
Oh, 100%.
Literally,
yeah,
the exact same way. They are used as breeding stock and nothing more.
It is crazy. Yep.
For 5 years.
Yep.
Well, they do it once, and then five years later, they're like, or maybe they do it for 5 years. I don't fucking know.
Whatever. It's hard to say. Again, there's enough mystery that what you're told and what actually happens is probably a little different. But like, again, it doesn't matter because what you're told is what you're told, and therefore,
right?
You know. Yeah. It is interesting because I think that Varen would be not down for it, but like she's the one in the Wheel of Time who says out loud, I'm sure, what a lot of other, you know, Aes Sedai are thinking. I don't think that she's the only one to have ever had the thought, but she is the person who says it in words, is we don't know how much hereditary channeling is. We don't. It's impossible to say given the information that we have in the Wheel of Time. But there is a case to be made for it being hereditary. And if you gentle and basically let wither away any and all men who channel, if it's hereditary, you are doing yourself a giant disservice if the other half of that equation, i.e. women who can channel, are still okay and are still being made by, you know, this one. If you make sure that half of this equation can't be in it, makes it much more difficult to go ahead and get powerful female channelers.
Exactly.
If you make it so that no men can really procreate.
Well, and didn't there was one of the Aes Sedai who talked about, I think it was Varen, who was talking about that there are some sisters who theorize that by gentling all male channelers, they are essentially culling that ability out of this particular genetic.
I have the weirdest case of deja vu right now.
Because
I feel like I already heard that.
Yeah. Because I said
I'm sorry. I legit thought it was deja vu, and I was like, I feel like somebody just said this, and I thought I was just like fucking crazy.
It's not good.
But it's a good point to reemphasize.
Go ahead and do whatever reemphasis, and then I want to hear what you think is the most interesting.
Oh, I was just saying, like saying the same point again is a good reemphasis, to expand on kind of like how so it's specifically the male members of the Aiel segment of Sauron society, that they are raised communally. They are simply called the male, not he. They're allowed to dress themselves and feed themselves, and that's about it. They're used as breeding stock for 5 years. And then when they turn 21 or when they start showing signs of channeling, they are basically kind of hooded and cloaked, just like they were whenever they were taken to be breeding stock. and it's assumed that they're going back to be breeding stock again, but instead they're killed and cremated.
Yes.
So,
so I mean, eventually they do execute them. Yes. But yeah. They got to get that good out of them first.
Excuse me. Well, and to be completely honest, I actually, again, I hesitate to say this sentence just because it could be taken incorrectly. No.
Oh, nobody ever takes anything you say incorrectly.
I know, right?
But you know what? I'm going to listen to you say what you're going to say, and I'm going to pick about 15% of the statement to focus on, and then I'm going to judge your entire character off of that 15%.
Excellent.
That sounds fair.
That's like most of America. Anyway.
Love it. I'm so happy right now. You guys are the
no,
best.
So I like the Sharins for the reason that they recognize that there is value even if there is not value. And what I mean by that is so many other nations, including the ones that we've talked about in terms of the Shan Chan just executing males who can channel, anyone in the Westlands just going ahead and reporting the men who can channel to the Aes Sedai so that they can grab them immediately and gentle them. You know, the Aiel sending them up to the Blight, all of that different stuff.
Oh, sorry. Thanks a lot for that gift, Josh.
I hate you so much.
Should we anyway. Make sure you join the Patreon so you can see and be disgusted like I am right now?
Right. The Sharins, I think, again, as we've already said, but I do want to like hone in on it. What they do to them isn't very nice, but there is a limit on it. Like, there's a time limit. They're not just throwing them away immediately. They're not just assuming that they're useless. They're not until Rand comes along, and as a male who can channel, who's not being immediately gentled, he recognizes that men are going to go bad. He recognizes that they are going to go insane. He recognizes that there are bad things that are going to happen. And he puts together the White Tower, or the Jesus.
He puts together the Jesus.
He puts together the Black Tower anyway, while also putting in a system.
Get the wine.
I know, right? While also putting in a system to make sure, now granted, he doesn't do it himself. He's like, hey,
he does it once.
Mazrim Taim, figure out a system because
this is critically important. Right? Somebody else do it.
Basically, of making sure.
I don't need men, Taim. I need weapons.
Yes.
Okay. You didn't say weapons for the light.
Fuck you, Andrew. Yeah. No, but again, I feel like the Sharins and Rand are actually somewhat similar in their understanding of just because you know this is going to happen doesn't mean that people can't be useful until it does. Now, you do need to keep a very, very close eye on male channelers. I'm not saying that there hasn't been bad shit that has happened in the past. I'm not saying that they aren't extremely dangerous in very bad circumstances. But there is an understanding of just because you know something bad is going to happen doesn't mean that you put down the cause of it right now. Like, right. That's such a shitty way of dealing with the problem that just happens all over the fucking planet in the Wheel of Time. They're just like, cool. So we know something bad could happen eventually. So we're just going to nip it in the bud. And you're like, holy shit, calm down for like a second.
It is such a good indicator as to just how terrified and how terrifying men who can channel are.
Yeah.
It's
God forbid you try to develop a fucking Teron Greal that filters out the taint, you fucks.
Right.
Well, and we know how terrified Aes Sedai are of even touching Teron Greal.
Trying anything new.
Yeah.
Of trying anything new.
But and again, we give the
vanilla channelers of vanilla channelers.
And they deserve it. But also
try some rope. Try some handcuffs. Put a blindfold on once in a while.
Tickle it. Just tickle it.
Look at Daniel's expression right now.
I'm just thinking of all of the people in the real world who have taken on the persona of the Aes Sedai, and how many of them would be so into grabbing some handcuffs and putting on a blindfold too. Now, how many of them? How many of them would go downstairs into the basement of the White Tower and be like, "No, no, activate this Tehran Greal. I'm going to sit on it."
And not only that, but to
it some vibrates of our more with a religious vigor.
Some of our more thirsty listeners, they're like, "Yeah, Andrew, you want me to put on handcuffs?
Do you want it to hurt, Kevin?"
I love what Morshani said. Bop it, pull it, like, twist it,
slap it, boo-doo-doo, pass it, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Oh, shit.
Oh. Anyway.
I feel like I can't say, like, one of the things that I found the most interesting. Like, it's so boring what I'm about to say I found most interesting. Like, not the most interesting, because you've both listed things that I found that were very interesting. But, we try to be a little different here. Because it's boring if we all just say the same thing one after another. Actual reality of how massive the Great Rift is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, you guys know I love numbers. Even though I hate math, I love the numbers.
Oh, yeah, hit it.
So the Great Rift is colossal.
It is.
You know, this is a massive gash in Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Pull it back. Pull it back, you fucking dirty bastards. Pull it back.
Never. Mm-hmm.
Not you guys. Mm-hmm. I meant everybody else.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, good.
But it goes between its range of variance of depth is between 1 and 3 miles. What the fuck? Try to focus on the numbers. It extends. What the fuck is happening?
Unfortunately.
I wouldn't say I broke. I just think it's kind of funny and caused me pause. Damn it, Daniel. Back out here again with the not laughing.
Not even wearing white Vans. Leave me alone.
It's over 100 miles, not 100 feet, not 100 yards, not 100 meters, whatever the fuck that is. I don't know what 100 meters is. But over 100 miles across at its widest point, so wide that the other side almost cannot be seen from certain points. So, like, can you imagine looking across a fucking canyon and just thinking, like, it just goes down into a plateau? Like, no, it just goes down. There's nothing else. And then you, like, climb down and get, like, halfway there.
You can see the other side.
Yeah.
Like, again, nobody, it's not easy. It's not, like, 5 feet away or any fucking thing like that. But you can see it. Unless it's very foggy on a clear day, you can look over and go, okay, cool. That's where the Grand Canyon ends. This one, on a clear day, there are points where you look at it and go, I don't know if this ever ends. Like,
just imagine there are sections of the Great Rift where even Adele cannot tell you hello from the other side.
Oh.
Thanks, guys, for listening to the Black
Now that we've digressed entirely.
But it runs for 2,400 miles. That's a little percentage-wise under half of the largest expanse north to south of the Sauron lands. So it goes almost halfway up Sauron. It's fucking nutty.
That
is a massive geological feature.
So now that we've discussed this, now that we've gotten to the point, why do we care about Shara?
Oh, we care?
I mean, what? No, we care.
No, I care.
Because when we were at the last battle and all we were like, we're gaining ground again. Suddenly,
You know what we need?
E-Bombay.
A gigantic casket. It is an Avengers moment, only in opposite.
Yeah.
Okay. The forces of the light are Thanos, and they're like, oh my gosh, we're finally gaining ground. This is great.
It's not even on your left. It's on your every side.
And then the forces of the dark are like, oh shit, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And then Demandred goes, hey guys, hold my.
You know what I need now?
Two rivers.
And Daniel, I want you to do the voice. I want it to be Gilbert Gottfried as the Dark One, just Demandred. Where the hell have you been?
No, it's literally before Demandred shows up with the Sharans, Dark One's losing, and he's looking over at the battlefield, and he's like, "Where is the Mandred? Where is he? He would be May Bliss, and he's not even here." And then all of a sudden, gateway opens and Dark
You One- rang, Dark Lord. I've brought you your army.
Why does he sound like Zarbon?
Yeah, because that's what he sounds like. Okay. I don't
I like it. I like it. The Mandred is now Zarbon, but you know, 50 times more effective.
And of course, the Dark One looks out and goes, maybe I've made the mistake.
Perhaps I'm coming, Zarbon. Quick, grab my balls.
Bliss.
And then he spends the rest of the battle letting the Sharans kick the shit out of everybody and going, oh, Luthaerin, face me, Luthaerin. Luthaerin. Face me, Luthaerin. Yeah, he's just a weenie. He did do us a very good favor of dispatching of Gawain. That was yes. Good. Good on him. That was nice of him to do. So, you know, maybe Demandred's not all that bad.
No, he is. He definitely is.
But even a bad guy can do a good thing.
Tylin, Gawain, Ravine, Demandred, in that order.
I would tie Tylin and Ravine. Actually, no, Ravine is worse. Whoa. Well, yeah, that's going from a moral standpoint. Are we talking about effectiveness or morality?
Yes.
Well, I think
Ravine is far worse in morality, but as terrible as it is to say, he's far more effective than Gawain ever is.
Yes,
correct.
Tylin isn't effective for plot reasons.
Yes.
And is equally terrible. It's just a shorter time span. Yeah. Like it's like maybe weeks versus months.
Yes.
In Robin's case. Gawain is like, no, maybe Gawain is a good middle point because he's not terrible, but he's also completely ineffective.
I am gonna throw out something that might get me hate. And I'm going to say it regardless because I'm
patrons. If you don't hear this in the future,
it's because it got edited.
It's because Andrew deemed it not safe for public release.
So, okay, the difference to me between Tylin and Ravine and other people like Grandal, for example,
right,
is. They are using magic to do what Tylin does without magic. Now, that doesn't make it any better. That does not make it any better overall. Let me be very, very clear about that. The actual act is still horrible.
Yes.
But there is a key difference that I'm going to point out, even though I'm not agreeing with it necessarily. And that is, after you have magicked someone, they want to do it. Now, again, that's not okay. That's not okay. Even if you convince someone that they want to do it, they still don't actually want to do it. It's still coercion. It's still not okay. However, it's magic, and therefore it's not completely the same thing. They do actually want to do it at that point, even if you have forced them into that. And that to me is just ever so slightly better. Now, again, we're like all the way down on the horrendous scale. It doesn't make it even remotely okay. But it's like, here's the end of the horrendous scale. And then here's what they're doing. And then here's okay.
Yeah. I'm like, only going to focus on the 5% where you said that's better.
No.
And now I'm going to try to destroy you in a public forum.
Yes, do it. That's what I'm into, Daddy.
No.
So yeah, Shara shows up at the last battle. They've got channelers.
They do. And they're very
We've got effective. Channelers. They've got channelers. They're damn good at what they do.
They have the freed.
They have the freed.
The breeding stock has been let loose from the pasture.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, that is actually something that I think Demandra does. That is, I mean, he does it for the wrong reasons because he wants more channelers to fight for the shadow.
Sure.
But he does the right act itself is better
for the wrong reason. Well, especially because at that point, when he actually does that, he has every good right to morally. Again, he's not doing it for that, but he does have every right to morally because at that point, he knows that Sidene has been cleansed. He touches Sidene and uses it. So at that point, he knows that there's no reason to keep all male channelers from channeling anymore.
There's also the strategic value, right? Of being like,
oh, yeah, of course.
You should follow me. I've set you free from your bonds. You are. It creates an innate indebtedness to that individual, at least in terms of this, looking at it from a military strategy point of view.
An innate loyalty, yeah.
Like, if you're like, oh, this is terrible. No, that's a terrible way to look at it. Look at everything that Daenerys Targaryen does in Game of Thrones. She's doing it for the right reasons. She wants to free enslaved people. Yes. But at a certain point, at a certain point, it tips over and she's like, I know I will gain troops and I need troops.
Yes. Also, yeah, exactly. And so again, we all know that.
And then she fucks her nephew. Gray,
right.
And then
life. She fucks her nephew. This is something that I want to say here, especially about Shara, because this is something that Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson both do extremely well in the Wheel of Time series. Life is gray. Life is only gray. Anyone who tells you that life is black or life is white is incorrect. They're absolutely wrong. Life is always gray. Now, granted, there are some people who are more evil. There are some people who are more good. There are some people who try to get as, morally correct as they can be, and others who try the opposite. But there is no one who has ever lived on this earth or in Randland that isn't some combination of those things.
What movie is it where the father used,
I think is brilliant. I love the idea of a nation that is just completely gray all the time. And there isn't even like a question as to whether they're gray coming in and just being that much more gray. And you're just like, holy shit, should we be killing these people? Probably not, because they've all been tricked into believing that Demandred is a god, but he's not. He lied to them.
Yeah, like it just also, adds to the,
they're also trying to kill us. So we kind of need to kill them back. Like, it's so well put together. And I love the Sharon arc of the last battle, even though, of course, as Josh said, it's an Avengers moment that I don't want to happen because we're finally turning the tide and then it gets turned back and it's not good. And I don't want to hurt these people. And like, all of it's bad. And I'm just like, no, also this is such a good plot device. Fuck.
Or you look at it from the perspective of, to even stand a chance of winning, the shadow had to bring in a surprise challenger.
Sure, that's also accurate. So just how well was the forces of the light doing? So well that they needed to bring in Shara. Boom.
I mean, like this isn't necessarily the topic, but it does tie in with it. Like whenever you have Grendel using compulsion on all of the all but one of the military leaders, right? When all you have assassin forces, yeah. When you have assassin forces coming in to kill like commanders and to kill leaders and to just deal these blows, when you have, oh, I know Rand or Luz Theron is going to come here to fight me. So the Aes Sedai that we figured out that bonded him, we've got her bleeding out slowly to die at the perfect time. And you still lose.
You still lose Theron. Ha!
Hey-o.
I almost made the joke. But it's one of the things where it's like, how it's the creator's luck now. Like, yeah, it's incredible to think of, like, because the Shadow has, for better or worse, the Shadow operates under a united front. Yeah, it's a North Korean dictator times 10, but it's a united front. He could have been, and probably was, commanding them to churn out Trolloc after Trolloc after Murjal after Trolloc after Jakar after whatever they could for centuries.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas when you look at the Force of the Light, you have all these different nations that have to get over their differences, come together, work together. And half the time they can't even do that because nobody fucking talks except for Tam. And they still still decimate the Shadow by the end of it. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good time. It's a good time. And the Sharans, you know, a lot of people come out of nowhere and it sucks. But
oh, it does.
As we kind of alluded to previously, it's real. It's hinted at that's what Demandred is over there doing. He brings an army, he comes to play, and that's the Sharns, a rich, strange foreign culture that, in my opinion, is written really, really well. And that's kind of like my wrap it up, my last thought right there.
Yeah.
Cultures would be boring if you could predict exactly everything about them. That's what makes like studying other cultures interesting, the differences, whether you like them or agree with them or not. So it makes them interesting.
Yeah. Andrew, what do you think? What are your final thoughts?
Or was that them?
I guess technically.
No, that was just a feeder off of what Josh said. Final thoughts. I enjoyed, surprisingly, I guess to me, I didn't expect to enjoy the geography of Sara more than I enjoyed anything about the actual Saurans. I can't explain why, but the geography, the history, that kind of thing about the Saurans, I found far more interesting than anything about the actual Saurans. Like, the Ayed being basically running a puppet government. I've seen it 1,001 times through fantasy, through actual fucking history. And
where do you current think history. Fantasy gets it?
From current and past it. Well, obviously, Wheel of Time doesn't get it from current events in history, but.
Also, everything old is new again. So it's basically current.
Yeah. I just thought it was incredibly interesting, and I know there's probably a ton of fans that agree that, you know, when Robert Jordan started writing The Wheel of Time, he predicted it to be 5 to 6 books. Mm-hmm. And it was like, no, I need more to do this. And then he was like, I'm going to do it in 12. And then Brandon was like, I've got to divide up the last book and it's going to be 14. And there's so much more that could be explored there. Like, there could be a whole book thrown in the middle of it. Like, let's say, like, between books 11 and 12, that is just Adventures in Sara.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish we had gotten that there's so much more that we wish we had gotten, obviously, from the series to learn more about it. But I also acknowledge that with that, some of the stuff that we do get, some of the stuff we do find so enjoyable, we may not enjoy it as much if it was fully fleshed out. We got to know everything about it. So
part of it is the mystery, definitely. Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, we really have talked about before, as soon as you actually start nailing some of that down, there are especially a lot of people in the fandom who are like, that's not what I thought, and therefore I'm disappointed. And you're like, all right, first and foremost, fuck you. But also, sure, fine, I guess. Like,
well, and that's one of the things, like, when things become TV shows, like, they're doing the TV show version of Lord of the Rings now. They're doing a spinoff series for Game of Thrones. Wheel of Time on TV is going to be, already is incredibly popular, and it's going to be even more popular as seasons come out. And I think they're going to see it, if nothing else, if you look at it from a business perspective, it's the proverbial gold mine. It's a new gold rush in entertainment. So if Amazon does it, somebody else is going to come in, and they're going to do offshoot series. They're going to do, Adventures of Young Tam.
There's already one put together about the Age of Legends. Now, granted, the
Age of Legends movies,
whether it will actually happen or not, whether it will actually be canon or not, whether it'll actually be good or not, hard to say any of those things based on the information that we have right now, but we do have an author. We do have a project slot. So we'll see in the future. But again, as you said, fucking, if you actually got into the nitty gritty of shit in the Wheel of Time, it'd be at least 100 books minimum. Like, just all of the different things that are left up to mystery are at least 86 books worth of stuff. Like, come on. And of course, if you write those books well, you create even more mystery about certain things, and you end up having even more
books. Yeah. I mean, the opportunity is there. It's golden. Rafe will help you write it.
We've already started helping you write it. What?
Yeah. But yeah, it's super exciting. Daniel, your final thoughts as we wrap up tapping the Sarens.
Indeed. I would really like to be a male channeler in Chara. Wait, hang on. Maybe not. No, I'm just
kidding. For a couple years, it might be pretty nice.
That is the wrong government program for guaranteed sex. Like, come on.
No, agreed. Completely. No, my final thoughts are, again, I legitimately think that Brandon Sanderson and Robert Jordan did exactly the right thing here. That's my final thoughts on the Sharins is, one of my loves of them is the reason that they are a question mark. I think that as a reader, sure, as Andrew has already said, I would love to know more about them. I would love to, at some point, get a spinoff series that's done well. I would love to see the adventures of Demandred in Chara, all of those different things. But we already get so much on the Aiel. We already get so much on different things. And the way that Robert Jordan reveals a lot of these things is so masterfully done. The fucking crystal columns is what I use when I can't come to anything else. Like, seriously, it's amazing. It's so good. It's like amazing. The greatest plot exposition device I've ever seen in my entire life, and no one has even come close to it since. But alongside that, you also want mystery. You want things to be unclear. You want enemies to not be completely an open book, all of that different stuff. And I think that the Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson do such a masterful job of telling you exactly what you need to know about them and leaving everything else up to you. And I will forever love the nation of Shara for the way that they're written. Not necessarily for what they do, not necessarily for who they are, not necessarily for whatever. There are so many problems with them, but for the way that they are introduced, the way that they are written, and the way that they interact with the series is all so well done. And that's amazing.
Yep. So some final announcements here. As you're listening to this, Jesus Christ, England, come on, fucking get it together. As you're listening to this live on the 26th, if you didn't get to see it, go back and check our YouTube channel from the 20th. We'll be doing, or we will have done, a live stream doing the first round of the fantasy draft that we're doing that Smack or Matthew put together for season one of the Wheel of Time. And we'll all be doing it together in the same place because we will be watching the first three episodes together. So go back and watch that. But do not fret, because not the weekend coming up on where you're listening to this live, if you're listening to it on the 26th, so not the 27th and 20th, because it is a holiday weekend.
Yep.
The first Happy weekend in, y'all. Yeah, the first weekend in December, either the 4th or 5th, we'll be doing a live stream, and we'll be talking about episode 4 and then episode 5, because episode 4 comes out on the 26th, episode 5 will come out on the 3rd. And we'll be talking about those and doing our fantasy draft reviews for those at that time. You may see tweets or something about it where the points are already added up for episode 4, but we'll be talking about it on the 4th or 5th. So keep your eyes out for that.
Another big thing. Can I just say really quick?
Yeah.
I know that Josh knows now in some ways how we're doing, but I looked back at our teams like last week or something, and given what we know about the trailers and such,
I see that fake confidence in his eyes. I see it.
I love the fact that we are still going to trash talk, because again, that's my favorite part. I love the fact that this is all amazing and this is all super fun. But I looked back at our teams and I was like, holy shit, none of these look like they're going to dominate. All of these look like they're actually going to be pretty solidly, like, even.
Josh has already counted up his points from episodes 1 and 2, and he's like, I have 4 points. Andrew's going to have, like, 326.
Shut
your face, Josh. Even if it's true, I don't want to hear it.
It's not. That's why he's saying it. He wouldn't say it if it was true.
Accurate. But no, Josh, no, I do cool. want to say, don't say anything. We will find out on the 19th and we'll all be happy. Plus, I mean, when Andrew pulls away from both of us completely in episode 3, you're just going to have to wipe that face grin off your face anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So in addition, if you're interested in going to WattCon, which you should be, there are a limited number of tickets. There's going to be limited attendance. So go ahead and grab your tickets while you can. Head on over to wattcon.com. You can register there. If you have accessibility needs, be it whatever the case may be it's for, you can put those in there when you register, or a link to where you register so that can be taken account of. But tickets are on sale. The room block is open. Go get your rooms. Go get your tickets, and we'll see you there, because all three of us are going to be there. I don't have a choice but to be there, and I would be there even if I had a choice. But definitely come out there, and we're excited to see this as a Wheel of Time focused convention. The planning has been absolutely nutty. The team planning it is incredible.
And not just
because you're going to love it. The team is not just because we're on
insane.
It, but
insane. Like, yeah, seriously.
It's insane. 35 plus different content creators and community members working together to make a Wheel of Time focused convention. It's absolutely nutty. It's also, we'll be at JordanCon. So if you haven't got your stuff for JordanCon yet for 2022, go ahead and start getting that ready. We'll see you there. And I predict we will be doing the same thing this in 2022 that we did in 2021 with the coins, because it just seems like a lot of fun. And even if I have to pay for the coins, which I know I don't, but even if I have to, still going to do it, because it's tons of fun.
Andrew's adorable.
Yeah. And other much more recent or closer news to whenever this episode goes live. WATA Holiday is happening again. This is its second year. We did it in 2020, and the turnout was amazing. It was a ton of fun. We're doing it again in 2021. We are raising funds for the Lightweaver Foundation. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be the 11th and the 12th. So that may also be a weekend where we're not doing our fantasy draft talk, because we're going to be kind of throwing a lot of energy and a lot of focus into the WATA holiday. But the 11th and the 12th of December, starting at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, WATA holiday is back this year. So come out, enjoy the chats, enjoy the tons of different people that are going to be on talking about the Wheel of Time and different things like that, and just have
be
a ball.
And if you be Gawain,
and if you can give something, no matter how big or small, to help support the Lightweaver Foundation, I know we support it. The Charity of Time organization appreciates it. And I know Brandon and the Lightweaver Foundation will absolutely adore everybody for it. So that's all the announcement kind of stuff that I have here at the end. I think that's pretty much everything. We can go ahead and wrap this up here. Wrap it up like fine china on moving day.
So thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you. Thank you. And you. And you. And you. Thank you. Oh, yeah, absolutely. This right. Thank you.
You in the back trying to hide on the person in front of you? Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you all. You guys are awesome. We love you so much.
But from all of us here at the Black Star Podcast, thank you so much for listening, whether it's live, whether it's on public release day, whether it's any day in the future. And if you're able to watch it in the past somehow, go ahead and watch it in the past. We love you. We thank you for your support. We thank you for listening. Leave what you think about Sara and how we covered it and talked about it in the comment section down below. And if you want to get a more immediate response, hit us up on Discord. Links for the Discord are on blacktowerpod.com, as well as the show notes or description here. But I have been Andrew, your Bajan Mihail.
I have been Josh, your Tsoravan Mihail.
And I have been Daniel, your Amenkan Mihail. And again, guys, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. You guys are awesome. You guys are the reason that we do this. If you haven't hit like and subscribe, I'm going to be the dick in the episode who says it. Please hit like and subscribe on all of the different platforms. But from all of us here at the Black Tower, we hope that you are having an amazing morning. And in case we don't see you again, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
So much trouble, just fitting.